Welcome, I'm Rose Aguilar, and this is Your Call. Today's guest, Uriel Hernandez, is working to plant 500 trees in East Palo Alto by the year 2020. He says East Palo Alto is an island of poverty nestled between Silicon Valley giants Facebook and Google. The median income in East Palo Alto is about $52,000 compared to Palo Alto's $136,000. In nearby Atherton, where the median income is $680,000, people live 19 years longer on average, according to Get Healthy San Mateo. And according to the EPA, East Palo Alto has the highest rates of childhood asthma than the rest of San Mateo County. Canopy, an organization that plants and cares for trees where people need them the most, works in the underserved city of East Palo Alto. Through their Branching Out program, where Uriel Hernandez is the community forestry coordinator, the goal is to ensure that the city gains the benefits like mitigating air pollution, reducing greenhouse gases, and improving public health. Uriel Hernandez is the recipient of this year's Bay Nature Local Hero Award for Youth Engagement. He oversees all elements of Canopy's Branching Out program, from building relationships in the community to enlisting neighborhood tree champions. On Sunday, March 26th at 5:30, Uriel, along with Save the Bay's David Lewis, who we spoke to on Tuesday, will be honored at the 2017 Bay Nature Local Hero Award ceremony. They'll also be joined by California Academy of Sciences, Rebecca Johnson and Allison Young, and will speak with them next Wednesday. For more information on the event, you can visit yourcallradio.org. And Uriel Hernandez joins me in studio. Hi, Uriel. Welcome to the show.
Hi. It's great to be here. Thanks for having me.
Great to have you, and congratulations on the award.
Well, thank you. I'm definitely humbled by winning it, and it feels very great to be receiving some recognition for the work that that we do in the community and sort of the work that I do to engage youth and get them out there and excited to do work in their community, do something for the common good.
Tell us a little bit about the organization Canopy and how you got involved with them.
Sure. So Canopy is an urban forestry nonprofit. Originally worked to plant trees and care for trees in the city of Palo Alto, but about 10 years ago started planting trees in East Palo Alto. Did some pretty major projects in the city of East Palo Alto. We planted over 1,000 trees along either side of 101 to sort of reduce all of those car emissions that get into the community. And we also planted 1,000 trees at the schools in East Palo Alto to, you know, sort of make sure that the kids in East Palo Alto are able to play under the same greenery that all the kids in Palo Alto are able to. I got involved with Canopy after graduating from college. I moved back to East Palo Alto where I grew up, and I took up a couple of odd jobs throughout my time back, and then I started getting involved with Canopy as a volunteer, just sort of helping them plant trees, teach kids about trees, prune trees, and, you know, eventually they got a grant from Cal Fire to plant these 500 trees in my community, and they needed someone to sort of help spearhead that program, and I got involved then.
Where did your interest of trees come from?
It actually really sprung up in high school. Growing up in East Palo Alto, there weren't many trees around. Nature was more of a destination. You know, you'd go out camping in the woods. But when I was in high school, I did a semester program where I went to school on a farm in rural Vermont. And, you know, just waking up and being able to step outside and being surrounded by trees, I'd never really lived in an environment like that. And I just started thinking, wow, this is what life should be like. You should just be able to step out of your front door and be engrossed in nature. I liked it so much I went back to Vermont for college, and sort of coming back, I sort of sought ways in the Bay Area to sort of bring nature back to everybody's everyday life.
Your family moved to East Palo Alto in 1992, and that's where you grew up.
Yes.
Can you tell us just a little bit about East Palo Alto? We often hear about Silicon Valley and these new massive campuses that are being built by Apple and Google. But a lot of people don't know much about East Palo Alto, and it's right in between Facebook and Google, right?
Yes, it is. It's pretty much, it's kind of in the center of Silicon Valley, but also off to the edge. It's very much cut off from everything else by 101 and just by these different socioeconomic walls really built around it. You know, it's pretty hard just as a pedestrian to get from East Palo Alto to Palo Alto. It's very cut off.
What do you mean?
Like the main thoroughfare between East Palo Alto to Palo Alto University Avenue, you know, there's a sidewalk, a narrow sidewalk on one spot. I try to bike everywhere, so, you know, just biking from Palo Alto to East Palo Alto can be a real hassle sometimes.
Hmm. Lots of traffic.
Lots of traffic, especially nowadays with, you know, with all these larger companies sort of moving in, you get a lot of people driving through East Palo Alto trying to get either to the East Bay or to the peninsula.
During the pre-interview, you told us that you refer to East Palo Alto as an island of poverty nestled between Facebook and Google. And I asked you if you were comfortable with me saying that. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Sure. I mean, people often try to use the term underserved community. Mm. And I feel so that's kind of dancing around the main issue. It's, you know, served by who and why, like who needs to take care of this community and who needs to serve it? Where do these aid programs need to come from? And East Palo Alto has a long history of sort of being independent and trying to serve itself. And it's taken a hard hit in trying to do that as the areas around it have just accumulated all of this wealth and all of this prosperity. And a lot of that has just overlooked East Palo Alto, because East Palo Alto has kind of always been on its own. It's always been a place where, you know, where due to racist policies or just other communities not wanting certain groups in their communities kind of pushed everyone to East Palo Alto. It used to be a primarily African-American community before that. Mm. It had a very strong Japanese agricultural community. It became very Hispanic in the late 90s, and it's just always sort of had these issues that aren't really as big in Palo Alto and Menlo Park and Atherton, which are right around East Palo Alto. East Palo Alto has sort of always been a very, very different community.
And the inequality is stark, because the median income in East Palo Alto is $52,000 compared to Atherton, which is $680,000.
Yes, it is absolutely incredible, the difference between those two. I mean, I grew up in East Palo Alto, you know, I went to elementary schools in East Palo Alto, and then I went to a high school in Atherton. I went to Menlo Atherton High School. So prior to going there, you know, I had maybe like one or two Caucasian classmates my entire life growing up, and then going to Atherton and then, you know, taking these classes with kids that grew up in a completely different world from me. It was very eye-opening.
Why did you decide to go to the high school in Atherton?
Well, it was a lot closer to my house. East Palo Alto, we had our high school, Ravenswood High School, was torn down and replaced with a bunch of big box stores. So the kids sort of got bussed out to attend high schools in Woodside or Atherton or Redwood City, but there was nothing super local. The one in Atherton was the closest one for me.
And that was a public high school?
And that was a public high school.
Can you talk about the resources at that high school in Atherton versus the resources of, say, the high schools in East Palo Alto where your friends went?
Sure. I mean, at that time, they were starting to sort of have a more local high school in East Palo Alto. They had East Palo Alto High School, which was located at the old Menlo Oaks Middle School, where I went to fifth grade, but that school got shut down by the No Child Left Behind Act and turned into a high school. Very small, only a few kids went there, and it was kind of low performing. Since then, East Palo Alto has built their own larger public high school, which kids are now attending, and it's doing really well. But at that time, you know, there wasn't really a good high school in East Palo Alto. Other than Eastside, which is, you know, a private institution, it's, you know, a private high school operating out of East Palo Alto, but that's still really small and not many kids get a chance to go there. Menlo Atherton, on the other hand, was very well funded. It was large for high school in this area, and there was just so much going on. And going there, I felt like so many of the kids already sort of had a lead. Mm-hmm. I went there. I had never taken a music class, never taken an art class, never taken a language class. We never had sports growing up. So I go there, and there are these kids that have been playing lacrosse for 7 years and like jazz experts. And, you know, it's a little hopeless. And, you know, working nowadays, sort of working with the youth in East Palo Alto, that's still kind of an issue. You arrive at these high schools and these other kids are just so far ahead. And it's, you know, not just trying to catch up academically because they've read books you've never read, but all these other skills that you pick up by having a well-funded school. And not just that, but everything else that affects you growing up, you know, your parents that are more involved because they're not working all the time, and all sorts of things. They're not wasting all day commuting to drop you off at a school that's 20 minutes away because your city doesn't have its own high school.
How far was the high school in Atherton from your house in East Palo Alto?
It wasn't too far. If I walked, it was maybe 35 minutes.
Wow, that's it. And it was kind of a different world. How did that shape your opinion of inequality and opportunity or lack of opportunity?
Well, I've kind of always noticed it growing up here in the Bay Area, that there very much are these little different pockets of society. I mean, just driving here to the studio, I realized in this neighborhood, I was driving here with my friend this morning, and he just pointed out, wow, I don't see any white people around here. Like, we pulled up to the gas station, and, you know, we just saw a bunch of different people. And that was just strange, because that's something that I wouldn't have really pointed out. But after I noticed that, it really got me thinking. And it's just, I mean, it's not just on racial lines, but a lot of the communities in the Bay Area that stand now were sort of divided upon racial lines, a couple generations ago. I mean, East Palo Alto, you know, that's where you'd send a lot of the African-American people moving to the Bay Area looking to buy a house. They wouldn't be able to get anything in Palo Alto. They wouldn't be able to get anything in Menlo Park. Mm. So they were pushed into East Palo Alto, and then the people in East Palo Alto are sort of pushed out to get a house in Menlo Park, to get a house in Palo Alto. And that's just sort of, you know, we're seeing the fallout of that nowadays.
Do people in East Palo Alto feel connected to Silicon Valley?
I would say that there's certainly some resentment. But it's interesting because, you know, Silicon Valley, with all of that innovation, is all that wealth. And, you know, some people just get, you know, they get money signs in their eyes. And, you know, I'm specifically thinking of certain landlords, you know, some people that, you know, as different waves of people have lived in East Palo Alto, they've sort of, you know, rented out to these different communities passing through. But nowadays, as sort of a wealthier wave of tenants is starting to move into East Palo Alto, you get a lot of people just sort of changing their houses to sort of attract these new tenants. You know, you see rents are skyrocketing. The city itself has recently started cracking down on illegally built second dwellings or second units at people's houses. So all these, you know, illegal in-law units, people are getting kicked out, and the houses are getting fixed up, and more people are moving in.
Is there any outreach? I mean, what would you like to see happen? Because we often hear about, you know, companies reaching out to certain communities or nonprofits. Is that happening? Would you like that to happen?
It's tricky. I mean, Facebook donated a bunch of money to local nonprofits for them to do their programs, but they're also not doing too much to alleviate all of the traffic. I mean, they're sort of just throwing money at other people and hoping that they solve the problem without actually doing all that footwork themselves. They're just kind of hoping that it happens through these other partners. You know, there's currently an issue where there's a big development going up on a pretty prominent corner that, you know, used to be a bunch of old apartments and mom and pop stores, and, you know, it was bulldozed about 10 years ago, and now they're putting in a big office building with the tech company. And originally it was supposed to be mixed use, you know, it'd have a bunch of, you know, mom and pop shops downstairs, you know, the community would be able to access it, it would have, you know, a bunch of public space. And then they, you know, that policy changed, and now it's all office building. But, you know, they're supposed to hire from East Palo Alto, have a bunch of, you know, members of the local community involved in their company, and now they're changing that, and they don't want to do that anymore. And I think that they're just going to pay more in taxes, which is very real. But then again, it sort of raises the question again about, you know, what helps the public more? Is it money, or is it actual integration and going out there and talking to people and really listening to each other? Because money can do a lot of things. Money is a free ticket to kind of do whatever you want.
Well, and also to find out what the community needs.
Yes.
Right?
Exactly.
How can they be good neighbors
yes.
to people who've been here for decades and they moved in with their huge buildings and bringing lots of traffic and a lot of wealth? Do you find that people or companies ever reach out to find out what communities like East Palo Alto need?
Yeah, I'm sure that they do. I'm sure that they try. I mean, they work with these partners, and, you know, they're channeling money into certain programs, and they're opening up schools, and they're funding art, and they're funding the environment. But I feel like a lot of them are sort of operating on their vision of what, you know, their campus and their community should be. And I feel as though, you know, there could be a little bit more listening going on both ends, really.
Hmm.
Because I feel like that like larger dialogue has yet to happen. Right now, everybody sort of has their own thoughts, has their own positions, but they haven't really opened up to one another.
Today, we are speaking with Uriel Hernandez. He is the recipient of the 2017 Bay Nature Local Hero Award for Youth Engagement. He oversees all elements of Canopy's Branching Out program. And Canopy is an organization that plants and cares for trees where people need them most. Uriel is working on a program to plant 500 trees in East Palo Alto by the year 2020. And Uriel grew up in East Palo Alto. He says it's an island of poverty nestled between Silicon Valley giants Facebook and Google. The median income in East Palo Alto is $52,000 compared to Palo Alto's $136,000. Atherton is more than $200,000. I got that number wrong earlier. It's about 200,000. And if you'd like to join us, the toll-free number is 866-798-8255. If you are from East Palo Alto, we'd love to hear from you. What changes have you seen in your city over the years? What changes would you like to see? And if you work in Silicon Valley, does your company have any relationship with East Palo Alto? Do you drive through East Palo Alto? Do you feel like Silicon Valley is being a good neighbor to East Palo Alto? 866-798-8255. You can also email feedback@yourcallradio.org. Tell us a little bit more about Canopy and the work that you're doing. This program is pretty amazing. The hope is to plant 500 trees in East Palo Alto by the year 2020.
Yeah.
How are you doing so far?
So this program started we started planting the trees in the fall of 2015, and we're about 200 trees in, so I think we're on track. We've planted about 172 in neighborhoods, so in front of people's houses, in their front yards, in the median there, and we've also planted about 35 in the local parks, so I think we're doing pretty well. This program is funded by Cal Fire, which is a state Forestry and Fire Protection Department. So,
And what's the process like?
Sure. So, generally, so far, I've been trying to have these larger community planting days. So, essentially, we'll get a couple of neighbors that are interested in having trees planted in their little neighborhood, and then I'll work with them. We'll do outreach together. We'll sort of walk the neighborhood, getting other neighbors interested, and we'll sort of organize a big big thing on a Saturday. We'll have a bunch of volunteers come out. We'll plant trees. We'll have a little celebration afterwards, you know, a little barbecue, a bounce house for the kids, and just try to make it a nice, fun event. And, you know, during those community plantings, we generally plant like between 40 to 60 trees about. So we try to definitely get the community involved. We try to get community partners, you know, local schools and nonprofits and sort of teams to just come out and plant together, sort of work with the community, you know, the residents that are getting trees planted there, and just sort of try to get everybody involved. And then afterwards, just sort of mingle together at this community celebration event.
And how do you determine where to plant the trees?
On a larger scale, or like in front of someone's house?
In front of someone's house.
In front of someone's house?
Yeah.
Well, a lot of the times when I go out and I talk to people about having a tree planted in front of their house, they, if they have hesitations, it's often because of utility conflicts. They're worried about the roots damaging, mm-hmm. you know, pipes or their foundation or something. And that's just because, you know, a couple of years past, there were some poor practices in terms of selecting a site for planting a tree. When we go out there, we try to locate a bunch of all of the underground facilities running to and from the house. So we try to find out where the water line is, sewer line, you know, anything that could be underground and could potentially come into conflict with the roots so that we don't damage anything in 20 years. And that's the other thing, you know, the damage won't happen this year, won't happen next year. It'll happen a lot further down the line. And that's something that you really need to think about when you're planting trees. You know, you need to look at the bigger picture. You need to really think about what it'll look like when the canopy grows. How wide of a tree is it at maturity? How tall of a tree is it at maturity? And, you know, what will the site look like in 20, 30 years when that tree does mature? So there's a lot of questions to ask, but we generally try to work with the resident.
And talk about the benefits, because according to the EPA, East Palo Alto has higher rates of childhood asthma than the rest of San Mateo County. Can you tell us, before you talk about the benefits, what are some of the other public health issues that are facing East Palo Alto residents?
Well, I can't speak for all residents, but I definitely know that, yeah, asthma is an issue.
Pollution,
absolutely. I mean, we're nestled, you know, we're right next to the freeway, so we get a lot of smog
right.
coming in. I think that there might not be as much physical activity in a lot of the kids as is necessary, but, you know, definitely having a rich tree canopy will encourage people to go outside and just generally be more active. I mean, it'll promote physical activity. It's a natural sunscreen. I mean, mm-hmm. if it gets any warmer out, you know, as climate may or may not change, people will be able to go out, and, you know, tree shade can triple or quadruple the amount of time it takes for unprotected skin to get sunburned, so it'll help out a lot.
I mean, the benefits are huge, right?
Yeah, the because benefits
it
are huge.
Mitigates air pollution, reduces greenhouse gases, improves public health, and it makes streets look much better.
Oh, absolutely.
Overall.
Absolutely. And I mean, you know, it's not just the aesthetic benefits, it's all of the benefits that trees provide. I mean, stress relief, reduce absenteeism. I mean, people just, when there's trees around, it's just more pleasant. People want to be there, you know, people want to walk to school. There's been studies that show that trees lower blood pressure, that they require less medication for children that have ADHD. It sort of calms them down, calms down traffic, you know, street landscape improvements. You know, that incorporate trees just sort of make neighborhoods better. They improve concentration, they improve attention, they've been shown to reduce crime, but a lot of these things are correlations. We don't really know why they happen, we just kind of know that they do happen. Mm-hmm. And you know, there are theories that it's sort of like broken windows in a community. You know, if it looks like people are taking care of the community, if it looks like people really invest their time and energy into improving the community, people will be more respectful of it.
And if they take part in it. And I'd love to ask you about that after, some of the students that you work with and their interest in planting trees and making their neighborhoods look better. Today we're joined by Uriel Hernandez, recipient of this year's Bay Nature Local Hero Award for Youth Engagement. He works with an organization called Canopy, and they plant and care for trees where people need them the most. And they're working to plant 500 trees in East Palo Alto by the year 2020. This is Your Call, and we'll be back after this.
This is Your Call on KALW Local Public Radio. If you have a perspective you haven't heard in today's discussion or a question that you feel needs to be answered, please join the conversation by calling 866-798-8255. That's 866-798-TALK, toll free. You can also send an email to feedback@yourcallradio.org or post a comment or question at the show's website, yourcallradio.org. Or perhaps give us a tweet at Your Call Radio.
This is Your Call. I'm Rose Aguilar. Coming up tomorrow, it's our media roundtable. We'll be discussing coverage of the election in the Netherlands and the defeat of the anti-Muslim candidate Geert Wilders. Turnout was incredibly high at 82%. They did not use electronic voting machines. They voted on paper. And then we'll also talk about a New York Times piece about the Trump administration's plan to increase the number of ICE agents by 10,000 to speed up deportation. Over the past decade, dozens of agents have been arrested and charged with beating people and raping detainees. That is tomorrow. And if you have a show idea or a guest idea, you can drop us a line, feedback@yourcallradio.org. And if you'd like to join today's show, we are speaking with Uriel Hernandez. He is recipient of the 2017 Bay Nature Local Hero Award for Youth Engagement. He works with Canopy, an organization that plants and cares for trees where people need them the most, and he's currently involved in a project to plant 500 trees in East Palo Alto by the year 2020. And if you live in East Palo Alto or in the surrounding area, we'd love to hear from you. We've been talking about just what it's like in East Palo Alto. It's an island of poverty. That's what Uriel calls it, nestled between Silicon Valley giants Facebook and Google. So if you'd like to talk about your experience there, we'd love to hear from you. And then also environmental efforts in the area. If you know of any young environmentalists who are working to make their communities healthier or any organizations, wow, now is really the time to talk about this, because I wanted to ask you just about what's happening at the federal level with the environment. But before that, you can give us a call at 866-798-8255. You can also email feedback@yourcallradio.org. What do you make of what's happening right now? We just got Donald Trump's budget. We just saw it. And massive cuts, not only to the EPA and NOAA, but it also hits vulnerable populations very hard. There's a plan to get rid of before school and after school programs, mm-hmm. to get rid of Meals on Wheels, which is a program that provides older people with food. I mean, it's a very mean document. What do you make of it as someone who's young and really cares about the natural world?
I mean, I think now more than ever, it's important for people to reach out to their local communities, to reach out to their neighbors, to reach out, you know, to the people immediately around them. I feel like nowadays, especially just like with all the technology we have available to us, and you know, the power of the social network, people are more connected to one another on a global scale, but very disconnected from each other on a local scale. Mm-hmm. And you know, I think now the time is right for people to just be more involved in their local community. And thankfully, East Palo Alto, you know, we've always had a strong local community. We've always had a lot of local organizations watching out for one another. And over the years, you know, through the recession, through the war on drugs, through just a lot of these epidemics, you know, all the violence in the early 90s, East Palo Alto sort of risen above it just due to the resilience of the community and due to everybody having each other's back. And I think that is more important on a national level now more than ever. People just sort of need to work with one another to make sure that, you know, that they have each other's backs, even when, you know, a larger government organization doesn't or is sort of being sapped of their power.
It's a great point, because so many of us are focused on what's happening in Washington because things are so shocking and are happening so quickly. But it is so important to really pay attention to what goes on in your backyard.
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. And, you know, if these larger organizations are failing, then you can start something local and just start in your backyard, start in your hometown, and just do, you know, do some good there.
What are you hearing from other young people? Because you work with students at Canopy, and you work with students to plant 500 trees in East Palo Alto by 2020. Do you have any stories that really stand out?
I usually work to sort of really get them involved in nature, in trees. But I really try to relate that to sort of the bigger picture. I mean, I think trees are a great metaphor for just how we take care of the environment. I'm not just talking about the natural environment, but I'm also talking about the man-made environment construction and just how you really have to look ahead and, you know, take everything into consideration and not just do things for a short return, but really think about how your actions will affect things 20, 30, 40 years down the line. And, I mean, especially with pruning trees and caring for trees, I mean, I get a lot of volunteers that come out and they think that all we do is plant trees, but that's not it. I mean, you know, you really make the act of planting a tree meaningful by making sure that the tree actually grows up to be old enough to provide all the benefits. It's, you know, it's kind of pointless if you just plant the tree and you never water it, you never care for it. You know, everybody wants the glory of planting a tree, but you know, sometimes students are like, oh, we're coming out and we're weeding, we're mulching. But then you explain to them, look, this is how the tree gets from being, you know, a little sapling to being an 80-foot tall oak, because people watch out for it year after year after year. And then, you know, when that tree is mature, then in turn, it watches out for us. It provides us with all of these benefits. So it's that give and take and working with, you know, this organism that really doesn't have a voice for itself, and just trying to sort of foster the spirit of stewardship in students. I mean, all the time I get students, they come out and first they're disinterested, and then I talk to them, I tell them the benefits of trees, and then I tell them, hey, look, by mulching these trees, we're going to help them survive. By weeding them, we're going to make them stronger. And then the kids get really into it. Hmm. And then, you know, by the end, they're really excited to be weeding trees. And, you know, that's just really great.
What do you think does it? What grabs their attention?
Just like, I'm not sure. I mean, for a lot of them, sometimes it's the first time they're out there and they're volunteering. And, you know, it's very different because there's this visual impact of it. Even if you're just, like, laying down some mulch or doing some pruning or doing some weeding, like, you get there and it's like, all right, there's just, like, this bush that we're working with. And then when you leave, you're like, oh, that's a tree, and it looks so much better, and it's standing upright, and I want to come back in a few years and see what it looks like. I always get that from kids, you know, they're like, oh, I want to come back and see what this looks like in a few years. And I mean, I hope they follow through and actually do that. But yeah, I think just for a lot of them, it's the first time that, I mean, maybe it's not the first time they're doing yard work, but it's the first time they're actually working with nature on that level. You know, it's not just that they're visiting nature, they're not just going to the woods for a hike, but they're actually, you know, doing something to kind of bring that, you know, do some kind of gardening in their own community.
Without a device.
Without a device, yes. Working with their hands.
At what point did you realize that you loved doing this kind of work?
I've always really loved working with my hands. I've always loved, you know, going out and working on the farm or going hiking or, you know, going on all sorts of, I mean, I try to work when I go on vacation. I've gone on like archaeological digs. I've gone, you know, hiking in the jungle to set up cameras. And I try to really be active and try to do things that are useful, not, you know, not just meander through the woods or like, you know, I try to at least do something of service whenever I go on vacation or when I'm active. So I think it's more productive to give something back. If you're being active, you might as well be helping someone out while you're doing it.
Hmm. That's so refreshing to hear, especially in this political climate. You worked at startups before you joined Canopy. What inspired you to switch gears?
Well, kind of job security. I mean, I was bouncing around startups because a lot of them, you know, there wasn't that much job mobility in them. You'd kind of get pigeonholed after a while. And I mean, maybe that's just me, the nature of the way I work. I'm sort of a jack of all trades. So I wouldn't really be a specialist in any of these places. I just kind of always help manage a bunch of people. And as a jack of all trades, that kind of got a little bit boring after a while. So I just kept jumping ship. And eventually I started with Canopy. Initially, I was an administrative assistant, actually. They needed an admin when someone went on maternity leave. And I joined initially just for the summer. And then, you know, halfway through the summer, they got news that they had received this grant to plant all these trees in East Palo Alto. And, you know, at that point, I'd been, you know, I'd volunteered for a while. I'd worked there for a while. I knew the organization from these different facets. I knew what it was like to be a volunteer, both planting trees, or as a tree planter, as someone that cared for trees, and then also someone that gave education lessons to kids in schools, because that's another big part of what we do. We have an entire education program where we go into the schools of East Palo Alto. Just yesterday, in fact, we gave our first lessons to fifth graders at Bellhaven Elementary, where, incidentally, I went to preschool. But yesterday we gave our first lesson to the fifth graders, and it's great because you get kids out there, you get them to explore the trees in their school. Yesterday's lesson in particular was tree identification. And, you know, that's definitely something that I didn't learn until high school at, you know, that school in the mountains. But, you know, getting these kids excited about the trees in their own school and having them think about things that they never thought about, you know, talking to them about not just the benefits of trees, but why it's important to sort of take care of these trees, why it's important to know what they are and how to be able to take care of them and how to be a good steward. And then, you know, giving them their little tree guide so they can walk around the campus and identify the trees. And then afterwards, you know, you see these kids running around at recess. You're like, oh, look at the trees. And they're super curious about them and they want to know more about them and they want to identify more trees. And that's just, it's really exciting for me.
We have a caller who couldn't stand the line, but George wants to know which trees you choose to plant and why.
Sure. I really like, I mean, larger trees have more benefits. You know, they provide more shade. They, you know, help bring more groundwater into the aquifer. You know, bigger trees are generally better. You can't always plant bigger trees, though. There's just not the space for it, especially in a place like East Palo Alto, where, you know, it's everything's sort of built really tight. And the infrastructure as it went in, it didn't really allow for a lot of room for trees. You know, we're planting a lot of these neighborhoods, and they have, you know, 1 foot, 2 foot, maybe 3 foot planting strips, and you really can't put any trees that are too large in there. But some very popular trees right now are crepe myrtles. I mean, those are very tough trees, and they don't get too large, so that's a very popular tree. But I personally love planting oaks. I mean, oaks are, you know, the native trees of this area. You know, they provide acorns, which are great. I don't know if you ever had anything with acorn flour, but it's really good for you and tastes pretty good. You know, squirrels and just all the wildlife around here, they know oak trees. They, you know, they use them to live, and just, you know, replenishing our environment with the trees that are native to this place is very valuable, very valuable. So I would go with oaks. That being said, there's really only two native oaks to this area. The coast oak and the valley oak. But, you know, as the climate changes, we're starting to plant a lot more oaks that are native to Southern California. I mean, they're still California native oaks. They're not native to this particular region, but because they're oaks, they serve pretty much the same niche in the environment, and they do well here, and, you know, the animals still know them. I don't think they'll really notice, oh, this is an Engelmann oak instead of a coast live oak. They'll just see an oak tree.
Well, thank you for your question, George. Today we are speaking with Uriel Hernandez. He is the Community Forestry Coordinator with Canopy. That's an organization that plants and cares for trees where people need them most. They work in the underserved city of East Palo Alto, and their goal is to plant 500 trees in East Palo Alto by the year 2020. And if you are a tree lover, or if you've lived in the same area for decades and you've seen your area change, give us a call at 866-798-8255. Change because of trees, I should say. I think so many of us take trees for granted. especially in, you know, in certain neighborhoods in San Francisco, the streets are lined with beautiful trees, and it's so, when there's not much traffic mm-hmm. or people around, it's so serene. I just think we take that stuff for granted, and if we spend a lot of time in Golden Gate Park.
I mean, absolutely, because, you know, a lot of these mature trees, you know, were planted so long ago.
Right.
They've just always been there. They're part of the background. You don't really think about that. You know, if you were to plant a tree in your front yard today, it'd be 20 years, you know, before it really, like, you know, really added to that serene aspect of a neighborhood. You know, until then, it's, you know, it's like a teenage tree is like this big gangly thing that you really just can't wait for it to grow up, essentially. And I feel like that's the thing. People just don't want to invest all of the time and energy and just don't have the patience.
Mm. Yeah, I was going to ask you, when you talk to young people, mm-hmm. there's so much pressure, especially because you're right in the middle of Facebook and Google. There's so much pressure to get that fast-paced tech job and see change. Our attention spans are so short. We want it now. And there's so much pressure to be a coder, for example, and make lots of money. No offense against anyone who has that job. But what about, you know, taking this path or working on something that you don't see the immediate effects right away, but future generations will see them?
Yeah, I mean, a lot of these things change so rapidly. You know, today it's coding, tomorrow it might be something completely different, but the environment will always be there. Trees will always be there. I mean, even man-made structures, they can last a really long time indefinitely, but, you know, in the Bay Area, there's just so much development happening. Buildings are coming up and going down all the time. Not so much in East Palo Alto because there's a lack of water, so there's kind of a hold on new construction, which kind of gives us more time to think about the future direction that we should take East Palo Alto in. I mean, it's a city on the move, but right now we're sort of in a planning stage, trying to figure out exactly what the future for East Palo Alto is and where we sort of fit in. We've historically been very different from the rest of Silicon Valley. And as, you know, all that wealth and prosperity gathers in Silicon Valley right around East Palo Alto and starts to sort of bring in new people into our community that are part of that society, we really have to wonder how we integrate, if we want to remain sort of being our own separate thing, like if we want to have the same identity that we've always had. I mean, East Palo Alto just has a really long, rich, independent history.
Where would you like to see it go?
I would like it to remain sort of as independent as it is. I mean, that being said, like, I just want it to hold on to all of those community programs that it has. And I mean, sort of one of the products of it being cut off from Palo Alto and from Menlo Park by 101, and then to the north and to the east, it has the bay right there. So it really is its own island, and a part of that is just the community is just by being isolated, it really works with itself. But it also doesn't have too many resources. And when I say resources, I don't necessarily just mean like money, but I just mean in terms of like grocery stores. We've got we've got a couple of big box stores, you know, where we're known for having the IKEA. We have a big, you know, golf store. We've got Home Depot, but those are more regional, and sort of over the years we've kind of lost a lot more of the smaller markets and smaller stores. You know, there's a Cooley Market, which is, you know, on Cooley Street, and it's, you know, 100 years old. It's
wow. This
little, you know, this little corner market store, and it's 100 years old, and a lot of people don't realize that. But, you know, back in the 60s, you know, that was the only place around there where you could go get your groceries, and it was sort of, you know, central to the community, and now it's just kind of tucked away in this suburban street.
Do residents have access to fresh fruits and vegetables?
In recent years, there's kind of been a push. We have a farmer's market now, and yeah, we're getting there. I mean, there's nonprofits that work in food security popping up in East Palo Alto. So, you know, we've got a new health clinic that sort of has their own organic garden. They're trying to foster that that in the community. We've got a lot of schools that are starting their own gardens. So, yeah, eating healthy in East Palo Alto is a big thing. And we see that a lot when we go to plant trees. People always want fruit trees.
Mm.
People are always asking about fruit trees. And that's something that we definitely want to be able to provide people. I mean, right now we provide more shade trees, you know, trees that will help with cleaning the air, cleaning the water, providing shade. But a lot of people want trees that will provide food.
We have a couple of emails and social media posts just saying thank you for the work that you're doing. And the youth are so important right now. And some people are saying, you give me hope. So thank you for that. Where would you like to go in the future? What role do you want to continue to play to try to protect our precious planet?
I'm really not sure. I mean, I'm kind of at the tail end of the post-college graduate, not really knowing what I'm doing with my life phase. For the past few years, I've been telling myself I want to go to graduate school, but I'm still not really sure for what. I studied architecture in undergrad, but because of the work I do now with the environment, I kind of hover between wanting to either, you know, pursue a master's in public administration and start my own nonprofit sometime in the future, or, you know, study landscape architecture and really sort of help design, you know, the green city of the future. I want to remain in this realm of work, definitely, but I'm not entirely sure of what capacity.
Hmm.
I just want to make sure that moving forward, people sort of really work to create these communities, conscious communities that have, you know, the best interests of everybody in mind.
And yeah. do you plan to stay connected with East Palo Alto?
That's another big question. I think so at this point. Growing up, and especially when I went away to college, just because of, you know, a lot of things that I saw in East Palo Alto, and maybe it was just like, you know, young rebelliousness, but I was a little hopeless. I was like, I'm leaving this place and I'm not really coming back. There's a whole big world out there that I want to see. But coming back and working with the youth that are there now, and like in a lot of them seeing that same hopelessness, you know, feeling that, you know, they're in this community that can be a dead end, and everybody else around them has so many opportunities.
It's just shocking to me that people can feel hopeless. I totally understand why, but you are right in the middle of Facebook and Google and so much wealth, and yet people in the middle feel hopeless.
Well, because the wealth doesn't come to us. It goes to everybody else, and it's really hard to tap into that when you are so far behind already.
I mean, it's not like you're in a rural part of the country
where
all the jobs have left and the downtown has cobwebs on the stores that are no longer functioning. I mean, you are in one of the wealthiest parts of the country.
And it's just zooming on by as people drive through, clogging up our streets with their traffic, going to their jobs. You're walking down the street and you're like, wow, there's another Tesla. I'll never have one.
Wow.
Or maybe you will. And there's things that matter more than money. That's the other thing that I'm trying to instill in these kids that we work with, that, you know, society and, you know, whoever else is influencing you may tell you that you just need to work for money and to get ahead in life, but there's so much more. We have an entire community around us. We have our families. We have our neighbors. We have a whole city that has our back if we have their back. And I just want to get people out there, because together we can do a lot more than any individual can.
The money thing is interesting, because you're right. Obviously, that's not the end all, but when I moved to San Francisco, I found a room for $300 a month. Now, I mean, you can't find a room for less than 1,000 shared with four other people.
Yeah.
So that's the reality that young people in this area are facing right now.
Mm-hmm. And it's all about banding together, really, finding like-minded individuals. And, I mean, whatever your priorities are, however you think the world should be, I mean, the kids are the future.
Mm-hmm.
You know, young people right now will be the leaders of tomorrow, and I just want to make sure that they feel as though they can make these things happen, not by themselves, but working together. You know, for me, it's just, you know, turning this plot of land into, you know, an urban forest, you know, a park filled with trees in the future in 20 years. But you've got to start doing it now, just finding people, doing a little bit of work, and just trying to stay active and involved in your community.
And how is Canopy funded?
We're funded by a variety of grants, private donors. We have contracts with the cities we work with. So just a variety of different funders help make all these programs possible.
Final thoughts, Uriel? Again, we have a lot of comments from listeners saying thank you. At a time when there's a lot of bad news out there, if you care about the environment, people are, you know, pretty depressed at these cuts and the people that have been appointed to the EPA, for example, but then they're hopeful when they hear young people like you. Mm-hmm. So what message would you send?
You can always do something. You know, don't lose hope. You know, the big government is so far away. They're not in your community, but you are, and you can change your community for the better if you want to and if you work with other people. And just listen to one another, talk to one another, talk to someone that is from a different socioeconomic class or just lives a completely different lifestyle from you, and listen to one another, and maybe you'll learn something and learn how to work together and do big things together.
Uriel Hernandez is the Community Forestry Coordinator with Canopy. That's an organization that plants and cares for trees where people need them the most. And he's working on a project to plant 500 trees in East Palo Alto by the year 2020. And if anyone listening right now wants to get involved, do you take volunteers?
Yeah, all the time.
Oh, great. So we have a link to your website,
yeah,
and they
canopy.org.
Can get in touch with you that way. And if you're free on Sunday, March 26th at 5:30, Uriel, along with a number of other conservationists and environmentalists, will be honored at the 2017 Bain Nature Awards ceremony. And you can find information about that at yourcallradio.org. Uriel, thank you for coming in. It was your first time on the radio, and you did a great job. So thank you for that, and thanks for all your work.
All right. Thank you very much.
Thank
it's an
you.
Honor to be here.
It's an honor to have you. Thank you. Coming up tomorrow, it's our media roundtable. We'll be discussing coverage of the election in the Netherlands and the defeat of the anti-Muslim candidate Geert Wilders. Turnout was very high at 82%. We'll also discuss a New York Times piece about the Trump administration's plan to increase the number of ICE agents by 10,000. Over the past decade, dozens of agents have been arrested and charged with beating people and raping detainees. Your Call is produced here at KALW. You can listen to past shows and sign up for our podcast by visiting yourcallradio.org. Laura Flynn produced today's show. Stephanie Purcell is our intern. Phil Hartman is our chief engineer. And David LaTulipe is our studio engineer. You can email us, feedback@yourcallradio.org. I'm Rose Aguilar. It's Your Call. Thanks for joining us.